Welcome to The Instant Home, a podcast about property and creating a home. We talk about everything from renting, selling, or relocating from abroad, to interior design and property staging to get a faster sale and a better price. Our expertise is in furniture rental, which crosses over all of these subjects, so we know all the best people to bring you the inside track on finding and setting up a home from home. Hi, I'm Steve Wright, the host of The Instant Home. Today I'm joined by Claire Miller of Relocate Cambridge. We will be discussing how Claire helps relocate families and individuals to Cambridge. She works regularly with international companies relocating their valued employees, often at very short notice, so knows the residential property market like the back of her hand. As a long-term resident of the city, Claire has a wealth of information about Cambridge, from the best schools to the most suitable neighbourhoods, to inside knowledge of community activities and social groups. I'm here today in the Free Press, one of the fantastic little backstreet pubs in Cambridge. Hi Claire, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the relocation business?
Yeah, it was back in 2005. A close friend of mine who'd been a buying agent for a local estate agent approached me and said she thought there was a gap in the market to find rental properties for clients. So we set up on a bit of a wing and a prayer from my top bedroom. Very excited when we got our first client, and everything started to develop pretty quickly from there. We worked closely with a lot of local companies on the Science Park. So our first big client was a company called Cambridge Silicon Radio. We did absolutely loads for them. They were based on Business Park. We worked directly for Arm, that everyone knows. Did quite a few private clients, and the rest is history.
So with how the market's evolved, from what you've been saying, you're very, very busy now. Do you have word of mouth recommendation? Is there still a great proportion of personal contact, or is it all coming through major companies?
A lot of my work, the majority, comes through big relocation management companies who take on the business of the larger companies, and then it filters down to me to do the destination provision, so DSP, destination service provider. So I don't actually have contact with the human resources parts of the company. I report back to the management company. Mainly, the main one I work for is based in the UK. Works really well. The folks that give me the work are really responsive and decent to work with. A lot of my work now, the majority, comes through big relocation management companies who are employed by the larger companies in Cambridge to take on the full range of relocation. So they help with visas, they help with removal companies, temporary accommodation. They channel it down to me to be the destination service provider to find the houses, so to do the real crux of it all. To start off with, I found it a little frustrating that we weren't dealing directly with the companies, but it's the way things have moved and it's not going to change. Interestingly, a company who are based a mile from where I live, I get their work through, I think it's someone in Arizona sends it to someone in Michigan who contacts me and I pick it up, which, yeah, that's the way it is, and it's not going to change anymore. The direct contact won't go back to the way it was. No, I report to the States, but they leave me to get on with it.
So then from that point, once you've been given the remit of whether it's a family of four, whether it's just a businessman, then do you get direct contact with the family and they tell you what they want and you're speaking to the family coming into the country direct?
I get a remit of what they think they want, which is quite helpful.
Is that different to what they actually want?
Sometimes the budgets, when I look at the budgets, I wince because they're just far too low. I reach out to them, always have a conversation. I quite often feel like the Wicked Witch of the West in the conversation, because they think quite often they're going to come over and spend a day with me driving around, which is what used to happen in the past. I'd crack out a minimum of 10 properties a day. They would have a choice at the end of that day. Now the market is so busy that they have to act very quickly. If something becomes available, very often I'm going to do video tours with them on the end of the phone on a WhatsApp call, and they have to make a decision straight away. There was a chap yesterday, 5 applications on a tiny house in Milton, and we were lucky enough to secure it. Really dog eat dog.
So it's a complete juggling act for you. You've got to manage the expectation of your clients and their obviously high expectation of a plethora of properties to choose from, but also you've got to make them realise that it's a complete race that you're in to be able to secure a property.
Yeah, unfortunately, they have a list of specifications. They're not going to meet all of them. People do eventually appreciate that if they lose out on an application or if they don't respond quickly enough and the place has gone, it's a bit of a shock to them. The people that got pets are in real trouble because having a pet reduces the number of places likely to consider you as a tenant by probably 85 to 90%. Landlords don't want pets. Quite often as well, if you've got children and you pitch against just a couple or a single person, you're a bit up the creek there as well, because all applications are usually put to the landlord. The landlord chooses who he wants to be the best tenant.
So it must be very difficult for you to manage the very high expectations of your customer base, knowing that you're in a race to secure a property for them.
It is, but you get used to it. I've got so many clients at the moment that they have to listen to what I say or they're not going to get anything, which sounds a bit savage. A lot of the agents are asking for information about the client prior to even considering them for a viewing. So they need details of the family, details of job position, details of salary, which is then filtered through, and then you are either allowed a viewing or you're not allowed a viewing. And then if they get a number of applications, they're all put to the landlord, who chooses who he wants. If you've got children, I do get people with, I've got a guy at the minute who's got a couple of children, only babies, but looking for a two-bedroom flat. If he's pitched with an application against a single person or a couple, he's not going to get it with two kids. And they find it very hard to understand that.
Sounds as though it's actually more like a job application than actually the pleasure of looking for a property to move into.
It is slightly, but the good thing is, if they're doing it remotely, I've done this for so long that I know all the areas. I'm not going to put them anywhere that's going to be detrimental to them or to their family. And if I go to do a WhatsApp video, mainly, particularly with the newer developments, I know what I'm going into. I don't have to really, in many ways, go to it, but it works. It works really well.
With the growth of Cambridge and the different areas, obviously there's a lot of modern property on the outskirts. Is it a constant changing areas where you would choose to put people once you understand the family's requirements or what the size of the family is? Is that something that's changing, or is the old areas still the areas that you would put a family who close to a park, or is that something that's very liquid at the moment?
I think with Rightmove, a lot of people have investigate round before they get in contact with me even. There's people who are seduced by the newer properties, say at the south of Cambridge, Trumpington, and they want an all singing, all dancing, big modern property, which is great. It's a bit further out of town, but the properties definitely suit families' needs. Good, clean, modern. You get people that want to live in the centre, so they walk out the door, they can go into a cafe, a bar, into a shop. Every individual's different. There are some that are hell-bent on the new places and some that can't stand them and want to be more in the bustle of, say, Mill Road. And it's all very dependent on budget.
The budget now, it's proper London prices, isn't it? Especially with the demand completely outstripping supply, prices are quite eye-watering in some of the areas now, aren't they?
The prices have gone up outstandingly since I first started, but in the last year, and I don't really think it's got much to do with COVID, I just think that there's too many people coming in. The last sort of year, 18 months, have seen for the first time a bidding war starting on rentals. Before, the advertised price was the price you paid. Now, someone, if it's on for £1,500 a month, someone can crack in at £1,600. And they're more likely to get it.
That must test your relationship with your customer base. You'll get told, OK, yes, we'd like that property, but then you'll find you've gone to get that at the price that you've discussed with your customer and come back and said, OK, no, sorry, we've missed it because we were outbid, or if you want it, you've got to pay X amount more. That must be a very difficult situation to manage.
It is and it isn't. I mean, they're aware right from the start that I'm paid by the management company. I'm not on a commission basis for any of the agents. So I'm working for them. It doesn't matter to me whether they spend £500 a month or £5,000 a month. It really, it doesn't, you know, it's irrelevant. It's tricky and they find it hard to cope with, but it's if it's a case of, well, they can afford it and it's, yeah, they're going to get the place or not get it, most of them will up the budget a bit.
That is just mad, isn't it? It really is. Yeah. Especially if it's a family, they're excited to be coming over and they found the house, it's got a garden for the children, or they managed to bring the cat over and the landlord likes that, and then they miss it because they haven't put enough money on the table.
Yeah, with families though, a lot of the families are governed by where the schools are going to be and getting school places. I'm lucky with the management companies that a lot of them employ a school search consultant who can find out which schools have places, because the schools are obviously fit to burst as well. And if you get a couple with two or three children, finding the school place overrides in many cases where they end up living.
Where you think they should be isn't necessarily where they have to be. So having the school finder to be able to locate schools where the family can place their children, that's the start, and then that goes on to you. So at least you're looking in the area that, I guess with Cambridge traffic, it needs to be walking distance of the schools.
Yeah, I mean, not all families are lucky enough to have the school consultant. Those which aren't will obviously read reports. The good thing I always say to clients is that there's not really bad schools in Cambridge, particularly the primary schools. They're all pretty decent.
It sounds as though it's more of a case of which schools have room.
They're all as well very multicultural. A lot of my clients worry that if their child goes into school and doesn't speak English, they're going to be sort of held up as, you know, as out of place, when it's very far from the truth. But with the schools, that is the emotional point. That's more emotional than the houses. But we always get something in the end. It always works out.
So predominantly properties unfurnished, or are they furnished?
Mainly unfurnished. Unfurnished would include white goods, fridge, cooker, washing machine, dishwasher, if you're lucky in the smaller places. People do come in and say they want just furnished, and I always say to them, it's a big mistake, you're going to reduce the number of places. Particularly the bigger houses don't tend to come furnished. The smaller flats will do sometimes, but a lot of my clients have never heard of a rental furniture company, which is really interesting, and I do recommend a local company.
Being Instant Home?
Yes. Because they bring the furniture to the property, put it together. I always make my really weak joke about you don't have to hang around with your screwdriver and your hammer and take it away at the end of the tenancy. And it's useful for people who are only staying for a couple of years, because some people will say, oh, it's okay, I'll just go to IKEA. I had one guy, he went to IKEA, he probably spent, you know, a whole week putting his furniture together. Then he was called away from the job and was left with a whole house full of new furniture, and he couldn't get rid of it. And obviously you can't leave furniture in a house that's unfurnished. So the benefit to him, and I did say to him, maybe consider renting furniture. The benefit would have been that the company comes and takes it away at the end of the tenancy and you just get on your plane and clear off.
As you said in the beginning, people don't know about furniture rental. It's because it's still not commonplace. I think in Australia, when we researched starting Instant Home, we were lucky enough to be on a trip, and Holly had done some research, and renting furniture in Australia is very prevalent. You can go into a furniture store and there's a buy price and there's a rental price. Again, sometimes it's second hand, but it's in showroom condition, and that's half where she got the idea from. But even 20 years later, the concept of renting furniture is only just starting to gather momentum. And as you say, for your business, at the end of the day, you lose 80% of the property if people are saying, no, it has to be furnished.
For sure, absolute sure. And it's sort of like a light bulb moment when people realise that they can rent the furniture, and it doesn't cost an arm and a leg to do it either. The other point, which is quite interesting, is that people who sometimes have to take a place slightly earlier than they'd like to are able to move into that place because they can get temporary furniture for a month or 6 weeks while their furniture's still, you know, sailing across from America. And at the moment, a lot of shipments are delayed under the sort of broad umbrella of COVID's delaying it. So people are waiting a couple of months for their furniture to arrive. So it saves a fortune to put rental furniture in rather than go into a service department.
And people coming over with families, it's a turnkey solution. They go in, the beds are made, the cutlery's in the drawer, isn't it? There's no, you know, if you've got a family full of jet lag walking into a house when they've got to make up the beds, empty the boxes, get the kettle out of the bottom of a tea chest, it's pretty problematic compared to walking in and putting the kettle on.
It's, I mean, because a lot of people, when they come over in the first instance, before the shipment, they arrive with the most enormous number of suitcases you've ever seen, and you don't want to unload those in temporary accommodation and then, you know, 4 weeks later have to move to permanent. So it's to be able to move into straight into your permanent accommodation is a godsend. So
we're seeing more and more the green side of it as well, because obviously it's very good for the planet, reusing furniture and not buying new and then discarding at the end.
For sure, and a lot of my clients come in and don't have cars, particularly in the centre of Cambridge, because the apartment blocks and a lot of the houses, you've got one allocated parking space. So to take your cardboard to the tip, it's not going to happen for some people either.
Oh, I guess being in Cambridge with the e-scooters now and the rental bikes, at the end of the day, there's not much need for a car. In fact, it's probably more of a pain than a godsend.
I live in the centre of town and we have residence parking, which is great. Don't really use the car. I use it maybe to go to the supermarket, but obviously supermarkets deliver for those that haven't got cars. And more people aren't bothering, particularly coming from overseas, to get a car, because it's a lot of people hate the idea of terrified of driving on the left-hand side of the road as well.
The good thing is they're not doing it very fast in Cambridge, so it's a good place to start, I guess. They have time.
Apart from the bikes whizzing around.
Because now, obviously, having two train stations in Cambridge as well, that, you know, the infrastructure to, I guess, the main place people will travel to is London, and it's very accessible from Cambridge as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally. And also there's the talk, you've heard the talk of the one at South Cambridge train station to serve the biomedical campus. So,
do you have any rental requests outside of Cambridge within the villages?
People like to go. I mean, South villages are popular. The thing is, if people haven't got a car, you can't go out to like Newton where I was, and then
of course
the bus goes about, you know, twice a day if you're lucky.
Yeah,
but
it's all about Cambridge.
Yeah, it's mainly all about Cambridge. Cherry Hinton is top priority for lots of people. You've got four or five primary schools. You've got good access into biomedical campus, hospital, and it's a bit cheaper.
Obviously, central Cambridge is the premium price, and then does it literally relatively by distance as the crow flies, do prices change?
The Trumpington development is more or less on a par. There's some really big houses up there that command very high rents. The apartments, you might get a little bit more for your money there, but it's not a huge amount, really.
Doesn't make too much difference?
Not really.
So having been in Cambridge for 20 plus years, you must have seen a lot of changes. And now with a complete multicultural society that is Cambridge, and that the restaurants that have come up to cater for those needs, it's changed massively over those years?
Yeah, it's changed. Yeah, it's not unrecognisable, that's for sure. You know, the core bits of it still remain the same. As some fancier chains have arrived with restaurants and pubs. There's now far more for sort of younger people to get involved in.
As far as the future of Cambridge and the property market for relocation or overall renting, how do you foresee this? They are going to run out of real estate space to carry on building. Where do you think this all goes?
I think definitely from my point of view, I'll never get back to where I used to spend a day with a client and drive around and then have a choice. I think that those days have gone. I think it's going to be far more remote, and a lot of agents would entertain the idea of doing remote viewings sort of 2 or 3 years ago. They wanted people to view in person, whereas now they've realised with technology you can show someone around remotely, and I think it's going to stick where it's a race to get a place. I don't think it's going to let up. I think it would have done if it was going to. It would have done it by now.
Thanks for not only bringing us to the Free Press, I shall be coming back again, But thanks for chatting today and talking us through your experiences over the years of the relocation market. It's quite amazing how things have changed, and be very interesting to follow it in the future.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening along today. We hope you've found this episode interesting. Feel free to reach out and let us know your thoughts on today's discussion. We can be reached on Twitter at Instant Home, on Instagram at instant.home. Until next time, goodbye.